Blog Talk Radio.
That was indeed Menudo on ABC, or as a friend of mine from grade school used to say, my noodles on ABC, my noodles on ABC. Well, if you weren't old enough to remember the horrific Menudo bits from the 80s, then go ahead and do yourself a favor and don't look them up. Just give thanks that the good Lord spared you of that, spared you, and... Just a second, checking to see if our guest is here yet, and he is not. Spared you of that and gave you another episode of the King for a Day Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host and the commissioner of King for a Day Fantasy Football, Rick Goreski, coming at you with the King for a Day Week 6 preview show. Let me see here. Still waiting for my co-host to show up. Let's see if there's anything I can get out of the way for now. Little dead air here as I'm holding up the show, stalling. Menudo. How about that? I tell you what, why don't we go ahead. Kurt Kujawa, the owner of the Legion of Doom, is supposed to join me tonight for the show. He's not on yet, so why don't we go ahead and kick things off. Let's review where we are as we approach the halfway point of the regular season. Looks like he's here now, so why don't I go ahead and bring in my co-host for today's show. Like Creepy Rob Lowe, my next guest loves nothing more than to set up an aluminum lawn chair at the community swimming pool, pull out a pair of binoculars, and just watch people swim. Please welcome the owner of the Legion of Doom, the team that I'm on record since draft day is saying will be crowned king in 2015, Kurt Kujawa. Thanks for coming on the show again, Kurt.
Thanks for having me again, Rick. Appreciate it.
Before we start throwing darts at week 6, why don't we go ahead and review where we are as we approach the halfway point of the regular season. Why don't we take turns like last week, if that's good for you. You go ahead and start and kind of tell us what you know about undefeated teams, teams with losses, etc.
Okay. Well, as of the end of week 5, we have one defeated team left. That would be the Meat Puppets. We have 5 teams that are 4-1, including Kenosha Commandos, Dirty Hippies, Lost in the Sauce, A-Team, and myself, the Legion of Doom. We also have... All the teams have at least one game won now that Made Men had their first victory. Unfortunately, there are 8 teams sitting at 1-4s. So some teams got to start winning here.
Well, at least we won't have another winless team like last year. I was surprised by that, that D-Risk didn't catch one victory last year. But that is out of the picture this year. Total points right now to continue on. Total points report shows over half the league has scored 400 points or more. There's one team, Lost in the Sauce, that has hit the 500-point mark. They have 509 points on the season. Fewest points scored goes to the Champions of Chaos, who, with 279 points on the season, are the only team to not have hit the 300-point mark yet. Most points scored against... is next. The Beerman's Brawlers have faced a ridiculously difficult schedule to the tune of 494 total points on the season. That's an average of 98.8 points per game. Next is the Phantoms, 471 overall points scored against them. That's 94.2 points a game. And then Made Men has 463 points scored against them. That's averaging 92.6. Man, facing off every week and you're facing 93, 94, 99 points a game. It's tough to win like that.
Absolutely. Moving along, power rankings. Have yours truly, the Legion of Doom on top, followed by the Meat Puppets, A-Team, Lost in the Sauce, and Kenosha Commandos.
You know, what's really impressive about that, the power rankings, is that for all these years I've been watching it, the system usually weighs heavily towards wins and losses in that equation. The Meat Puppets are undefeated, yet the system is putting your team, the Legion of Doom, at the top, and they give it a percentage mark. You have 1,000, which is the highest it can get, and Meat Puppets are at 9997. So I can't say I've ever seen that, to be totally honest. I just haven't seen. Usually the undefeated team is always at the top, so that's pretty amazing for you. And I keep saying that I picked you because I totally think you're going to do it, and then I can walk around bragging that I picked. I can't pick it. I can't pick my own damn players and win it, but at least I can see somebody else doing it. Anyway, strength of schedule says the Irishmen continue to have the toughest schedule in the league if you look at it by opponent record, wins and losses. The Irishmen's opponents have a combined 35-25 record. Four teams are right behind the Irishmen with a 34-26 combined opponent record. Bless you, by the way. If you judge by total opponent points, then the prospects of the Champions of Chaos turning their season around just got dimmer. With a combined opponent point total of 5,207 points, the champs are first in an area where they surely wish they weren't. The only other team in the entire league to hit the 5,000 opponent point mark is the Muskego Raiders, who have faced a combined opponent point total of 5,062 points.
Easiest schedule by far by points goes to the Damage Inc. with 45-16 combined opponent points, followed by the Hurricanes at 45-91. If you go by combined opponent record, the easiest schedule continues to be the Dirty Hippies at 24-36. Not that it would matter with the pace that Tim Severs' team is scoring, but Lost in the Sauce has the second easiest schedule by record for 25-35.
You know, if you don't mind me asking, does it shock you that your team's third with a combined opponent score of 26-34? I mean, third easiest schedule, because that surprised me.
Yeah, it kind of does surprise me, especially since I thought all four of the teams in my division were going to be right up there at the top as far as wins go, and it just hasn't seemed to happen that way.
But again, just like Tim's team, you know, I don't think it really matters when you're scoring as many points as you and Tim are. You know, easy schedule, hard schedule, you know, you guys would still be racking up wins. Toughest division, by the way, to your point of you thought your division was pretty tough. The toughest division, if you look at total wins, is the Purple Division. They have 13 wins between the four teams in that division. Next up is the Silver Division with 11 wins. The top division by points scored is the Gray Division, 1,691 points scored, followed by the Blue Division at 1,331. Just to throw it out there, the Red Division is at 1,636. Blue Division, I already said. Wow, I said the total wrong for the Blue Division. Pardon me. Going to reset that quickly. Gray Division has the most points scored in the league, 1,691. The next highest is the Red Division at 1,636. The Blue Division has 1,626. Purple, 1,608. Then we move over to the Silver, 1,585, and the Gold, 1,514. The top players after three games, do you want to switch off on these? Like, I'll take quarterback, you take running back. Is that cool?
Absolutely.
Awesome. So top quarterbacks, I think we're doing a top five at each of these positions. Top quarterbacks with just point per game average, Tom Brady, 19.25 points a game. Carson Palmer and Andy Dalton are tied at 16.2 points a game. Aaron Rodgers, 15.4 points a game. And fifth place is Cam Newton, 14.25 points a game.
For running backs, Devontae Freeman sitting at 14.4 points per game. and Deion Lewis had 8.5 points per game. The demise of Jamal Charles at 8.4 points per game, and David Johnson 8.8 points per game, and Adrian Peterson is at 7.75 points per game.
At wide receiver, Julio Jones, 11.4 points a game. Larry Fitzgerald and DeAndre Hopkins tied at 9.8 points a game. Brandon Marshall at 9, and Julian Edelman at 8.25 points a game.
Tight ends, Tyler Eifert at 9.6 points per game. Knox Gronkowski out of the top spot for the first time this year. Gronk is now at 2nd with 9 points per game. Gary Barnage of Cleveland is a surprise 3rd place for 6.6 points per game, followed by Greg Olsen at 6.25 points per game, and Jason Witten at 5.4 points per game.
And like we talked about last week, look at the drop-off there. I mean, you go from Eifert at 9.6, Gronk at 9, and then all of a sudden you're down to 6.6, 6.25. The 5th tight end is at 5.4. It's almost half.
Mm-hmm.
So it certainly explains why people do go out of their way to draft tight ends high at sometimes. Place kicker, Gostkowski, still leading the way. In fact, he increased his points per game last week. He's now up to 11.75 per game. John Brown of the Giants, surprising me, he's at 10 points a game. Chandler Catanzaro and Brandon McManus are tied at 9.4. And Graham Gano, 9.25 points a game.
Defensive line, Muhammad Wilkerson sitting at 7.5 points per game, moves into the top spot this week. I think it was a 10th point ahead of J.J. Watt, who, thanks to a big fat zero in week 5, falls to 7.4 points per game. Jacquez Smith is 3rd with 7.2 points per game, followed by Fletcher Cox and Carlos Dunlap, tied at 6.8 points per game.
Over at linebacker, Jamie Collins of New England, Thomas Davis of the Carolina Panthers, they tie for the lead at 11.5 points a game. DeQuell Jackson, he comes in next, 10.8 points a game. Preston Brown, 4th at 10.4 points a game. And last but not least on the top 5, Telvin Smith, he has 9.8 points a game.
Rick, if I could just go back to the defensive line real quick. Are you surprised that J.J. Watt's not blowing it out the water against all the other defensive linemen this year?
I'm not. I had this funny feeling that, because how long can a guy keep doing that, much less do it from the 3-4 position? I knew he would still be great. He would still be really good, and he is. But the whole thing where you're playing like a quarterback at the defense, you're scoring like a quarterback at defensive line, just didn't know if that could keep going. I have been in Dynasty
absolutely.
League too, so I totally did think about that a lot and contemplated whether this was the year to move him. I do think he'll still turn it around and be the top defensive lineman, and he'll still score a crap load of points, and it'll still be worth it. But I don't know if we're going to see what we saw last year. That was crazy.
Yeah, starting to think maybe it wasn't worth a first-round pick, or at least the beginning of the first round, that's for sure.
I would have not been able to take him number one overall. You know, I could have taken him as a top-five type pick, but not number one overall. There's just too many. This is a quarterback league. You get a chance to take Al Walker and Aaron Rodgers, now Tom Brady, and you get a quarterback that's going to put 12, 18 points on the board every single week. That makes your job so much easier to win.
Absolutely. All right, moving on. Defensive backs, Josh Norman sitting at 12 points per game. He remains on the top, followed by Rashad Jones at 10.25 points per game. Corey Graham is tied with Tyrone Mathieu for 3rd at 9.2 points per game, and James Igbo is 5th with 8.6 points per game.
You know, if I could toss one out to you now, a question. Anything on these top fives for these different positions that you say to yourself, oh, hell yeah, I saw that coming? I mean, for me, I absolutely saw Rashad Jones, Corey Graham, and Tyrone Mathieu. I saw those three, you know, being in the mix. That didn't surprise me at all. You know, Julio Jones, I've been saying I thought he was going to be the number one wide receiver.
Yeah, you know what surprises me? I didn't see it coming, I guess, is the fact that, now Keekly's been hurt, but no CJ Mosley in the top five. No Lavonte David in the top five for linebackers. That was pretty surprising for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes you wonder if a couple of weeks if we'll see those guys start to resurface.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we talk about high player point totals for the year? Thus far, 33 points from Aaron Rodgers in week three, 27 from the running back position is the high. That's Devontae Freeman. Looking at 24 points from Larry Fitzgerald that happened in week two. Actually, I screwed up here. I'm starting to read. I'm just talking about total highest point totals, period, for the entire year. We got 33, 27, 25 from Ben Roethlisberger, 23 from Ryan Shazier in week two, and then Andy Dalton in week three. So do you want to tell the audience the highs per position? I just read the highest scores all year long.
Okay, yeah, sure. For quarterbacks, it's Rodgers in week three at 33 points. Running back would be Devontae Freeman at 27 points in week three. Wide receivers, Larry Fitzgerald in week two with 24 points. Tight end, Gronkowski, week one, 21 points. And Greg Olsen in week three. Kickers, 21 points from Cairo Santos, week four. Defensive line, 21 from Fletcher Cox in week five. Linebacker, Ryan Shazier, 23 points in week two. Defensive back tie, three of them are tied with 18 points. Kerry Williams, Josh Norman in week one, and Tony Jefferson in week two.
I forgot to throw Doug Martin's 24 in there, too, when I read the high totals for the year. He bumps Shazier and Dalton out of fifth place and moves into there on his own. Let's move over to week six news, though. Waivers, there's no trades this week. So the only thing I really can report on are the waiver moves that we had, the restricted free agents that were claimed. And waiver moves are the last moves of 1 week slash the first moves of the next week. So I think it's fitting if we mention them in the show here, along with league news for week six. This week in the Gothic Conference, the Hurricanes were awarded linebacker Stephon Anthony and Antoine Bethea off waivers. Your team was awarded the rights to, it's Rashad Matthews, I think, right? From Miami?
Yeah.
Yeah. In the Renaissance Conference, the Typhoons were awarded the rights to Roddy White. And the Gators, my team, picked up Clay Matthews, Green Bay, off waivers. I continue to be amazed at some of the talent that is available off waivers and that more guys don't put in for these players. Over in the Gothic, Stephon Anthony, Clay Matthews in the Renaissance, Bethea in the Gothic, Roddy White, Rashad Matthews. I mean, if an owner pays attention, they can really make some hay using the restricted free agent market. And I know you use it, so what are your thoughts, and what could you share with your fellow owners about the value of it?
I can only speak for my cases. You know, I'll overload on a position sometimes, and you know, bye weeks will start to hit or players are just doing okay. And, you know, I'll start dropping them and picking up some other players. So it's like, all right, I was overloaded with that of good players. And I just started dropping them because I needed to cover bye weeks and things like that. So I that's how I see the waiver wire. You know, people eventually will start doing it to cover bye weeks, things like that. And you just got to be in there to go ahead and scoop them up and pay attention.
Well, I've always viewed the waiver wire, just to say one more comment on this, I always found it useful in two ways. Number one, the teams that are in need of help, that need to get talent. This is a way to scoop up some guys that will improve your roster, and you don't have to waste your number one pick or early pick in the free agent draft to do it. So it's kind of a real nice way to improve your team if you're not so good. For the teams that are good, if you're paying attention, you know that when Tuesday rolls around, you're not going to get some of these players. You're going to have a late pick in the free agent draft. So this is almost a way for you to be rewarded for being on the ball by scooping some of these guys up before they even become a free agent. So in that respect, I think that it's an underutilized tool in each owner's belt, and kudos to all the owners that do use it. I guess we should, since we're benefiting from it, we should hope people continue to not pay attention.
I would agree.
Why don't we go ahead and get out the crystal ball and make some predictions here? It is cross-conference week. It's one of my favorite times of the year in King for a Day. For those that aren't familiar that might be listening from our Mad Dog League, we do have a 24-team league that's split into two 12-team conferences. Each conference holds its own draft, but at the middle of each year, we're still one big league, and at the end of the year, both conference champs face off in one giant league championship. We call it the Clash for the Crown. But back on track, each year at the middle point, week 6 and week 7, the conferences face off against each other during the regular season, with teams in the first week facing off against the teams that drafted in the exact same draft position as they did, and then the following week taking on the teams that had the complete opposite draft position as they did. So if I could ask Kurt, what's your feelings on cross-conference play? Do you like the idea of facing off against teams that have some of the same players as you do? I know for myself, I love that increased strategy.
I also like it. I love to see who else is, you know, who else on my bench I might be able to play to take a chance at increasing the points of somebody that I would normally just be a wash. I like that strategy for myself. I think it's awesome.
I always call it shortening the field when I can match somebody else on a player or two. It just brings that from a 13-man game down to like a 10- or 11-man game, and if you feel confident about your ability to acquire talent, you actually want to take that down. But why don't we kick this off with the first matchup, first in a battle of the number one picks. We've got the 3-2 Damage Inc., who took Andrew Luck first overall, taking on the 1-4 Irishman, who took J.J. Watt. Thanks to 24 points from Devontae Freeman and 12 from Mark Ingram in the Thursday game, Damage already has a 39-0 lead. No offense to anybody, but screw the matchups here. The guy's got a 39-point lead after two players going up against the fourth lowest scoring team in the league in the Irishman. I'm taking Damage Inc. What do you think?
I am also taking Damage Inc. 39 points is nothing to mess with. Yeah, for sure. Damage all the way.
All right, moving on. The 2-3 Make It Rain take on the undefeated Meat Puppets in a battle of two teams that took Aaron Rodgers second overall. You've got the 9th highest scoring team and the only undefeated team in the league in the Meat Puppets going up against the 3rd lowest scoring team in the league in Make It Rain. And it's funny because at first I thought this was going to be another quick pick, but I'm not big on some of the players on either of these teams. So I wanted to just take the Meat Puppets. I wanted to just blow by it. And then I stopped and I looked at the matchups. And actually, I think the game's actually in play. I don't think it's a slam dunk for the Meat Puppets. Rain is, he's trotting out a 3 defensive back set on defense, while the Meat Puppets are going with a 2 defensive linemen set this week. I found that really interesting. The Meat Puppets did leap out to a 13-point lead thanks to Kiki Haha's Thursday night performance. I'm kind of softening my stance on David Johnson, who I've been ripping on for a few weeks now. It appears as if David Johnson is taking on the role of the goal line back for Arizona. So with all that said, I am going to pick the Meat Puppets, but I seriously think Rain is going to give him a run for his money in this one. This is not the laugher that it might seem if you just look at the total overall numbers. I think the matchups are a lot closer.
I would agree with you. For once, Aaron Rodgers won't be a difference maker in a game since they both have him. Pete's finally taken James Starks out of his lineup. Hooray. Andre Ellington is more than capable of hitting that home run like he did last week. Again, I say this every week, but Jordan Matthews he's due, and this is the game to do it in. Giants have a terrible pass defense. Over at the Meat Puppets, DeAndre Hopkins is always a factor. Like you said, David Johnson, he could get a couple touches on the goal line and score. I did find it surprising, like you said, defensive line, two of them. That's Hey, whatever makes it work. I mean, it's 5-0. I think looking at it, though, I'm going to go with the Meat Puppets. I just can't overlook 5-0.
Well, isn't that kind of weird, though? You go into it and you want to just, you're kind of, your mind's going, yeah, Meat Puppets. But then you stop and you're like, oh, damn it, Rain's actually in this. You know, he could actually win this.
It's going to be closer than we think, that's for sure.
Next up, 2-1-4 teams clash as Made Men takes on Gracie's Got Game. Made Men took Adrian Peterson third overall in the Gothic Conference draft, while Gracie's Got Game selected Le'Veon Bell in the PM draft. Man, Gracie's going with two tight end and two defensive line on their formations. So on offense, they're going two tight end. On defense, two defensive line. Bye weeks and injuries are playing a role. Actually, looking at this, on defense, it's actually injuries. That's why he's got two defensive line in. But on offense, he's just electing to start Charles Clay over Jeremy Hill. I do like Triple G's defensive matchups on the defensive side of the ball. Not so much on offense, but Brady's going to likely light it up against Indy, so I think that'll even out. For Made Men, I love Dalton against Buffalo. I think that's a great matchup. Up until Mariota laid an egg last week against Buffalo, they had been giving up a lot of points to opposing quarterbacks. Peterson's fantastic against anybody, much less a wounded Chiefs team. That could go bad in a hurry in Kansas City, by the way. And in my opinion, this coming game is going to tell us the Chiefs against the Vikings. That's going to tell us how the rest of the year is going to go for the Chiefs. If the Chiefs come out fighting, show some pride, then they're going to have a shot to compete, even though they lost their best player in Jamal Charles. If they come out and Minnesota just trounces them, that's a sign right there that they've given up. So back to the Made Men. I love all their matchups on offense. I mean, Murray could be good against they're so good that even Murray might be good this week against the Giants. Sanders against Cleveland, Julius Thomas back and playing against Houston, Landry against Tennessee. Defense, he's got Griffin against Kansas City. Collins is a nice matchup this week. I think Urine's better matchups on D. I think he's got better matchups. That's his team name in Mad Dog. You're in trouble. Gracie's team has better matchups on defense, but Made Men's offensive matchups are spectacular and superior. So I'm going to go with the Made Men. What about you?
I am also going to go with the Made Men. I think this game is going to come down to DeMarco Murray Monday night, and I think he comes through for the Made Men. I look at both teams, and like you said, very good matchups for both teams. Although Gracie's Got Game, better watch out. DeMarcus Ware just got ruled out for that game. I'm still going to go Made Men for sure.
The fourth picks belong to the 4-1 A team and the 1-4 Beerman's Brawlers. The A team had selected Jamal Charles, who was producing really well until his torn ACL last week put him out for the season. Meanwhile, the Brawlers took Andrew Luck with the fourth overall pick in the Renaissance Conference draft. Luck, of course, has missed two of his past two games with an injury, and he's questionable for this coming week's game. Beer has jumped out to a 24-point lead, courtesy of Devontae Freeman, in the Thursday night game. While Beer was chugging along with Freeman, A-team's plan was falling apart, as gimpy Julio Jones got blanked in that same Thursday game. Brandon Cooks got blanked too. I'm going with Beerman on this one.
I'm going with you on Beerman's Brawlers. Andy Dalton definitely outscored Joe Flacco on this one. Already with a 24-point lead. I like his matchups. With 18, what he's got left to play, I just don't see him making it up. I think Beerman takes it.
Yeah, that's the key. He's got a lead, and he's got a team that, at the very least, is a push, so why not take the guy with the lead? In the battle of the fifth pick, we've got 2-3-2 teams clashing. D-Risk takes on my very own Gators. D-Risk selecting J.J. Watt with their pick in the first round, while the Gators took Adrian Peterson. D-Risk is out to an early lead. They got 13 from Kiki Haha, while the Gators got blanked with Brandon Cooks. I did just notice that D-Risk has Bradford in the lineup, so I might slide Bradford, and right now I have Eli Manning in. I might slide Bradford in to cancel that out and shorten the field, as I like to say. I've got seven
got a
players
bad idea.
On bye. Yeah, I got seven players on bye this week, so I am not 100%. I'm going to, because of that, I'm going to pick D-Risk to win this one. He's got the lead and some of my better players around the bench, so I mean, don't get me wrong, I like my players better, but he's at full strength and he has a lead, so I think that's the smart pick.
I'm with you on that, Rick. I hate to say it, but yeah, I do like your strategy, though. Sam Bradford for Sam Bradford, that might work for you. D-Risk, yeah, with a 16-point lead, and he's got some major players rolling. I hate to say it, but yeah, D-Risk is the one to win.
Just got me at the right week. That's all right. Drafted down the sixth spot. 3-2 Muskego Raiders take on the 1-4 Phantoms. The Raiders had taken Marshawn Lynch with the sixth pick in the Gothic, while the Phantoms took Jamal Charles, who, as we mentioned, is out for the year now. Looking at the Raiders matchups, the Mariota-Walker combo has to pay off at some point. He did trade for Mariota in that big trade, I think it was a week ago. I do think that Walker is the receiver to have from Tennessee. Young quarterbacks tend to throw a lot of safety cushion type routes to the running backs and tight ends, and they like to latch on to certain players as security blankets. I think Walker's that guy for Mariota, and Miami's been torn up on defense already this year, so it certainly can happen again. I mean, this is the first game with their interim coach down there. Gore, I mean, he could score against New England. It wouldn't surprise me if there were some points scored in that game. Lynch against Carolina, man, I don't like the matchup, but it's Lynch, so it's not bad. Not big on Jennings this year at all. I do love Keenan Allen and the defensive matchups that the Raiders have. For the Phantoms, Manning is playing with handcuffs on this year, Peyton Manning, that is. I'm always amazed when a coach is just stubborn stupid to the point that it hurts his team, and it's just dumb what Kubiak is doing there. It's amazing that a team could be that good on offense, and then all you do is change coaches, and man, they're just, you'd like to say they're human, but it's worse than that. I'm not a big fan of Charkandrick West, which was the hot pickup this week. I don't think that's going to last. The Phantoms, they're running a two tight end set this week on offense. It is a damn good one. It's Greg Olsen and Tyler Eifert, so it's not like they're doing it out of desperation. Not going to be able to fill that Jamal Charles hole, though, no matter what they do. I like Jordan Matthews and the defensive matchups as well. I'm going to lean towards Muskego in this one at the end of the day. I like their offensive matchups better. But then again, I like the Phantoms' defensive players and their matchups better on defense. So it's really a horse apiece, so I'm going to go with the home team, which is the Muskego Raiders in this one.
I am going the opposite. I'm going to take the Phantoms in this one. I think even with handcuffs on, Peyton Manning bounces back against a terrible Cleveland defense. I said before, I think DeMarco Murray is going to come through. Jordan Matthews will have a big game. With Muskego, I'm not sold on Mariota right now. Lynch could go either way. He's just coming back from that injury. I'm going to go with the Phantoms on this.
Going over to the seventh pick, lucky number seven in the draft was 4U2NV, who, with a 3-2 record, take on the 4-1 Kenosha Commandos. 4U2NV took Russell Wilson, while the Commandos selected Rob Gronkowski. Looking at the New England factor, both teams have a piece of that action this week. Kenosha has Gronkowski, while 4U2NV has Edelman. Both owners also have Woodhead on their team in their lineup. I see 4U2NV has Odell Beckham in their lineup, and he's a game-time decision as far as I know right now. Not sure if he's going to be healthy even if he does play. I was about to say great defensive matchups for 4U2NV, but then I noticed that Kenosha matches them player for player. Both teams have Dansby and Vinny Ray, who I like both of their matchups this week, so that cancels each other out. Kenosha still has a player on bye in their lineup. I assume he's going to move that player out, and as long as they do, I'll pick Kenosha to win this one.
I am going to go with for you to envy. I think this might come down to quarterback play this week, and I think Russell Wilson would be able to get the job done over Jay Cutler. Odell Beckham Jr., yes, might not play, but looks like Bork's got Dwayne Harrison as his backup. I'm thinking that's the way he'll go with that. And I think Giants are going to be passing all day long, so that might turn out to be okay even if Beckham Jr. doesn't play. Kenosha, I do like the matchups. Fitzgerald, Calvin Johnson, Gronkowski, all three could go off. Like you said, yeah, his linebackers cancel each other out. But I don't know. I think Bork squeaks this one out.
Facing off out of the eighth spot, we've got the 1-4 Wolfpack taking on the 3-2 Typhoons. Wolfpack selected Le'Veon Bell with their pick in the first round. Typhoons took Antonio Brown. Oddly enough, no players in common for these two teams. Wolfpack had three players go in the Thursday game. Typhoons had two. Wolf is up right now 22-7. The Typhoons have had a hell of a time at quarterback this year. They lost Ben Roethlisberger, and now they filled in with Tyrod Taylor. Now they lost Tyrod Taylor right now. They just picked up Blake Bortles out of free agency, and I've heard Bortles is battling a little, not shoulder, but arm problem right now. So tough break for Typhoons. They can't get a quarterback to save themselves. Looking at the matchups, I do love the Typhoons matchups at O-Flex and D-Flex. Wolf has a strong defense, but his O-Flex is so weak. I'm going to go with the Typhoons on this one.
I am going Wolfpack on this one. I agree with you on Blake Bortles. Also, Antonio Brown, dude, with Michael Vick throwing the ball, forget about it. And he's already down 22-7. I just don't see him being able to put enough points on the board to take Wolfpack out.
With the ninth pick, if we move on, the 2-3 Old Helm Ogres take on Lost in the Sauce, who is 4-1. Each of these owners took Eddie Lacy with their first pick in August draft. Both teams will now face off here in week 6. Both teams have Eddie Lacy and Bobby Wagner, by the way. Wagner may not play, so it could go to backups, assuming these guys post backups. Now, Old Helm is up 6 points right now, thanks to Kenny Vaccaro's early game efforts, but Lost is playing out of their mind, so they've got a piece of the New England game in Edelman. Gates is up against the Pack. Good defensive matchups, too. I'm going to take Lost in the Sauce in this one.
Give me Lost in the Sauce as well. Pretty much just love his whole team, man. I think he's got a really good team, and I just think the Old Helm Ogres don't have enough to compete with them.
Moving over to the 10th pick and the 10th matchup that we are previewing, the 1-4 Pale Riders are taking on the 4-1 Dirty Hippies. The Riders got Luke Kuechly with the 10th pick, while the Hippies took Odell Beckham Jr. Wow. If you look at this, Pale has Brian Hoyer in their lineup. Jameis Winston and Carr are on bye. So this is his bye week fill-in. He's taking Brian Hoyer. Pale's also going too tight end with their offensive flex here. They've got Gates and Martellus Bennett. Other offensive flex is pretty good, though. Jeremy Hill, Justin Forsett, and DeAndre Hopkins to go with Gates. Kuechly's back joining Mosley. Levante David is on bye, or else that dream defense would have taken the field for the first time this week. For the Hippies, they do have a lot of intriguing matchups. Vereen at face value isn't much, but his role is rumored to be expanding. C.J. Anderson could get an increased workload, and Cleveland gives up a ton of rushing yards, so that's really juicy. That has, you know, boom potential. Beckham, when he's healthy, he's a stud, and Philadelphia has been giving up a lot of yards and points. He's not healthy, though. Arian Foster has a good matchup against the Jags team that gave Doug Martin, he let Doug Martin shred them last week to the tune of 24 points, so that's all assuming best-case scenario for the Hippies. I mean, the Hippies have 11 points out of their defense from this Thursday's game. I'm going to go with the Pale Riders in this one. I just think that, you know, it's boom bust from what I see on the Hippies, and I can't put all my chips on boom.
I'm also going with the Pale Riders on this. Hoyer to Hopkins could very well work out for him. Justin Forsett, if he plays, should do well against San Francisco. Jeremy Hill's got a little bit tougher of a matchup against Buffalo, but I think he'll be all right. Antonio Gates looks like he might be the real deal. Bennett's got a great matchup. I wish I would have been able to see what that dream defense would have looked like, though. We'll have to wait till next week. Shane Vereen, I think he's going to be just fine on Monday night for the Dirty Hippies. Arian Foster's good. I'm just not sold on C.A.J. Anderson. Haven't seen anything from him yet. And I, if he can't get it done against Cleveland, forget about it.
Right.
Don't know about Odell Beckham Jr. this week. I just don't know if Dirty has enough to roll. Pale Riders, take it.
11th spot. We had a few minutes left. The 3-2 Hurricanes take on the 2-3 Saiyans. Hurricanes took Rob Gronkowski in the morning draft. The Saiyans took Marshawn Lynch in the afternoon. Very interesting matchup here. I do notice that the Hurricanes have A.J. Klein in their lineup, and with Keekly coming back this week, I'm not sure that's a good move. Hopefully they can plug something else in there, or else they're going to be playing one short. Klein aside, the rest of the defense for the Hurricanes, that reads like a Pro Bowl team. You got Cyprin, Basea, Weddle, Campbell. Stephon Anthony already has 6 points on the board, courtesy of Thursday's game. Interesting that the Hurricanes have two players in their lineup that they picked up just this past week off waivers, talking about Anthony and Basea. Brady and Lewis could be murder this week, but the Saiyans cancel Lewis out. Saiyans picked up 9 points from Drew Brees on Thursday night, and, you know, boy, this thing's even. Looking at the Saiyans, Lynch is Lynch, so despite the bad matchup, it could go well. Barnage has been hot. I don't think Denver gives up a lot to the tight ends, though. Smith and Jackson are beasts on defense at linebacker. This could go either way. I'm going to go ahead and break the tie with Tom Brady being the tiebreaker and pick the Hurricanes.
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree with you on that one, Rick. Tom Brady, Deion Lewis, Rob Gronkowski, if you're going to have three New England players to roll at the same time, those are definitely them. I know Deion Lewis gets canceled out, but that could be the dagger in science. James Jones, you don't know what's going to happen with him from week to week. Gary Barnage, going against the Denver defense, that's going to be a tough one. I think Hurricanes take this.
Let's move on to the last matchup, and we got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left, and we can do this. It's your matchup.
Okay.
The picking at the turn, your team, the 4-1 Legion of Doom, taking on the 1-4 Champions of Chaos. Legion of Doom took Antonio Brown. Champs of Chaos took Luke Kuechly in the first round. I'm going to go with your team in this one. It's very simple. Lowest scoring team in the league takes on the third highest scoring team, and the highest scoring team, the higher scoring team, has a 10-point lead out of the gate. The Champs have one player on bye in their lineup right now and another that may not play in TJ Yeldon. So I don't see a path to victory for the Champs. You know, like I said in the review show, the Champs need to make some moves in order to salvage their season. What do you think?
I think I'm going to take this one. I like my matchups. I sat Antonio Brown this week because, like I said before, Vic's not doing him any favors. She has nobody for tight end. Witten's on a bye, and her other guy just played Thursday night. So, I'm taking it for sure.
Well, that's going to do it for our show, for our Week 6 preview show. I want to thank you a ton for joining me, Kurt. We're out of time, so I'm just going to go ahead and wrap this up with closing time playing in the background. Thanks again to everybody for listening. On behalf of my guest, Kurt Kajawa, thanks for joining us on the King for a Day Fantasy Football Podcast.
Thanks, Rick.